Pubcast.
My dad was also a trans medium, and that was exclusively what Casey did. Virtually all of his work was done while in a deep trance state. My dad was half and half. He was half, you know, waking state psychic and psychic medium, because he would bring through spirit and specific messages from spirit. And really, as a young man or a young person, those things gave me confidence in life after death from an early age, to see him doing a psychic demonstration, then just spontaneously go off course and say, okay, your cousin John is here, and, or whatever, David, and he, you know, you guys used to do this together, go fishing together, and he loved pizza or whatever, you know. And you could tell that the things he said were very specific and they were hitting home in these people.
Welcome to the Liberated Healer Podcast, where we touch on a variety of topics in the world of spirituality, energetic healing, and everything in between and beyond. Take an adventure on a shooting star with your hosts, Gina and Linnea, offering their wisdom, guidance, and everlasting love and support.
Hi, this is Gina Cavalier. I am the host of the Liberated Healer Podcast, and today we have Mark Ireland. He's an author, and he's written a couple books, and we're going to talk about a lot of interesting, fun things today. And welcome, Mark.
Hey, thanks for having me, Gina. Looking forward to our chat.
Me too. Obviously, I love your last name. You know, I'm Irish, and I was very drawn to that. Anyways, this is the book we're going to be talking about today, The Persistence of the Soul, Mediums, Spirit Visitations, and Afterlife Communication, and many other things. But I do want to highlight that you have an organization called HelpingParentsHeal.org that I want to get into, and it's to help parents with community support through, you know, when they have lost their children or child or anything like that. And I actually sent a bunch of your links to some friends that have lost children in the past who are still suffering and grieving. And it is really hard. And it's something that if you haven't lost your own child, it's really hard to comfort another. So I'm really excited to dive into some of your work today.
Great. Yeah. It's an important organization. It's grown like wildfire, which is sad on one hand, but on the other hand, it's good that we're there to help people. And we're very unique in our approach because we're the only group of our type that allows the open discussion of afterlife evidence and spiritual experiences.
Absolutely. And that's really interesting. And I think that based on some of my work and experience, it's kind of wonderful to know that there's this other side, and, you know, that part of them is not passed on. So let's give a little bit of background on how you got here. I know you had a very famous father who was a psychic back in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And if you guys want to go and look on YouTube, Richard Ireland, there's some fabulous television shows that he was on where he would completely cover his eyes and he could just read what was on a piece of paper. And so that must have been fascinating to, you know, be privy to that kind of household back in that time.
Yeah. And if people want to see it, actually, I got links to everything we're going to talk about today on my site.
Okay.
There's a link to my dad's videos. There's a link to the Helping Parents Heal organization. There's a link to my certified medium site, which we'll probably talk about later. And then anything else, it's all, if you just go there, it's a one-stop shop. And that's markirelandauthor.com.
Okay,
but
great.
Yeah, growing up with my dad was pretty interesting. He grew up in rural Ohio, and his abilities were pretty much discovered by my grandmother. She said as early as age three, she noticed things in him. Like, he always knew when grandpa was coming, and they didn't have a telephone or TV or anything. They're out in the woods. And every time he said grandpa was coming, grandpa would show up within a short period of time. And they actually started planning meals around when my dad said, grandpa's coming.
Wow.
At the age of five, he had gone into the Columbus, Ohio Children's Hospital for corrective surgery on his eyes because he was born cross-eyed. And after the surgery, his eyes were cupped and bandaged. And they actually tied him down to bed because they were afraid he'd mess with the bandages. This nurse came by and around and felt sorry for him and said, I'll let you up if you promise not to mess with bandages. And he agreed. And then she went on about her day. Came back later to find him bouncing a ball against the wall, catching it, thinking, oh my God, he's taken off the bandages, but he hadn't, which is probably even more scary for her. And then she pulled in some other doctors to observe this. And then they started trying to do their own little tests on him, like putting him in a bed and then having one doctor stand at the foot of the bed and another in the doorway and saying, who's in front of you now? And he was able to get that right. So that was kind of the early indication. As an adult, you know, my dad later started his own church, which is a really progressive kind of non-denominational church. But his first exposure to all this kind of stuff was through spiritualism back in the 40s or 50s. I guess it would be the 50s. And as an adult, he not only had his own, you know, non-denominational church, but he did a lot of secular demonstrations in various locations, TV shows and whatnot, like the Steve Allen show that you had mentioned earlier. He counseled Mae West, who I got to meet when I was 19 years old. I got to tour her apartment, and that was pretty cool. And he counseled like Amanda Blake from Gunsmoke. Some of these are older names for younger people who may not know them, but they were celebrities of the day. David Jansen, Glenn Ford. And I think the thing that is most intriguing to me is I have a card from Mamie Eisenhower on behalf of President Eisenhower and her in 1956 note of congratulations to my dad on behalf of the president and her for my dad getting married back then. So I gather that he must have been counseling them as well, although that's my only shred of evidence at the time. But otherwise, why would he write them?
Was he ever connected with like the same kind of abilities like Edgar Casey and things like that in the time? Or
I think they were a little bit different from one another. My dad was also a trance medium, and that was exclusively what Casey did. Virtually all of his work was done while in a deep trance state. My dad was half and half. He was half, you know, waking state psychic and psychic medium, because he would bring through spirit and specific messages from spirit. And really, as a young man or a young person, those things gave me confidence in life after death from an early age, to see him doing a psychic demonstration, then just spontaneously go off course and say, okay, your cousin John is here, and or whatever, David, and he, you know, you guys used to do this together, go fishing together, and he loved pizza or whatever, you know. And you could tell that the things he said were very specific and they were hitting home, and these people would tear up and be so overjoyed that I thought, wow, this is cool. There really is something more. It's not just, doesn't have to just be taken on blind faith alone. And so that came in very handy for me later in life.
I guess when he passed and you're like, hi, Dad, you know, instantly right afterwards, what do you want to say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because then I've had him come through in a number of ways typically through mediums, but I also think through some of my writing has been inspired, and I've been pushed by him, and seen a lot of synchronistic events pop up and things just line up where I know he's had a hand in that. And part of that's keeping his legacy alive, but also fulfilling the work that he didn't get to finish while he was here.
Absolutely. And he would have loved, you know, these conversations right now where they're out and they're open and people are able to, you know, without like, you know, getting thrown in jail, you know, super harsh crush, you know, he had to go through hoops just to, you know, prove that he wasn't looking like that.
He was a pioneer. Yeah. And it was a lot harder for him back then. And it had to be presented as more entertainment, which you'll see in the Steve Allen video.
Yeah.
Just because of where we were as a culture and a society, and our thinking at the time was so limited. And for some folks, it still is. Academia is still, unfortunately, a lot like that. But I think the grassroots level, the average person out there, there's a mass interest in these kinds of spiritual topics. And it's okay to talk about connecting with someone on the other side, or reincarnation, or near-death experiences, and all these kinds of things. And a lot of these things are being scientifically studied today to a greater extent than in the past, which is great.
I saw your interview with Alison Dubois, which she's one of my favorite all-time people in this space. And I just want to give a shout out to her. And why don't we talk about a little bit where you really kind of were forced into going into this deeper because you lost a child.
Yeah. And I actually did two with her. So I don't know if you saw part one or part two, but if you didn't see the other one, you might enjoy that one as well.
Okay.
But so even though my dad had these abilities and I was proud of him, I'd take friends to see him and stuff like that, I never really sought to be him or the next version of him. And he always said, Mark, you're very psychic. You tell friends I was very psychic. And I have episodes happen here or there that were evidential of that. But, you know, they're more spontaneous and unpredictable. They weren't things like I was really working on that or trying to go down that path. And I took a more conventional path. I got a degree from the university. I got married at a young age, went into a business career, had two sons at a young age, and was kind of more just focused on that whole career thing and the advancement part of it and the notoriety within the company and stuff like that. And then got, I guess, pulled back into reality of what's more important when my youngest son, Brandon, unexpectedly passed at the age of 18. And so you're right. I mean, that was the catalyst to really catapult me back into my dad's field and a more meaningful path. Not that what I did before wasn't important, because it did groom me to be able to have discussions like this and be able to communicate effectively and to write and be a critical thinker too, because I do have a skeptical side as well. And it's not necessarily skeptical of the phenomena so much as just making sure that someone who claims to have these ability really does and things like that. So
no, just for a second, because I used to think that now that I was moving more into what I would consider my life purpose, that all these, you know, kind of later in life, that a lot of the things that I had done before, you know, it's like, wow, it was almost like a little bit of a waste of time, but none of it is a waste of time. I'm using every single skill, every single person I met. And now I'm doing a documentary and I left entertainment business. I really thought I left entertainment business forever. And now I'm doing a documentary and I'm using all my contacts, all my skills. So I just, you know, always want to remind people that the journey is just, there's no mistakes really. You get to it when you're supposed to. So not to worry about, am I on the right path? Like, I think people panic about stuff like that.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Even after my son had passed and I had started journaling all these unusual experiences and the meetings with four top mediums and then researchers within the field of psychical research and parapsychology, that I had put my first book together, Soul Shift. And I, it was just like pulling teeth to find a publisher at the time, but I was unknown and all that kind of good stuff. And I remember Linda Williamson, a medium in England who I'd met with back in 2004. So that's 19 years ago. She brought through all this information. It was just pretty mind-blowing in retrospect, because she said, you know, you're going to lead, you're going to be a leader in this field of, you're going to lead a large group of people. Basically, it's going to be very important, and it's to bring a greater understanding of these things. She said, but it doesn't always happen in the time we expect or when we want it to. It'll unfold as it's supposed to. And she said, you know, you may think of your day job is not that important or the things you do in your day-to-day life, but it is, because you're meeting people, you're helping people there, and you're honing your skills. All you have to do is be yourself and people will follow. It's just a natural course. So to hear, to look back on that at the time and then see, like, just for example, the Helping Parents EO organization now has over 26,000 members worldwide, 175 affiliate chapters worldwide. Yeah. We do a conference every other year that's going to draw 1,000 people in 2024. And the healing that comes from that, that you see take place in people who are down and bereft of hope and in deep state of depression, it's very fulfilling. And to have people come up to you, like at the last conference, half a dozen or more, and say, I just want to thank you because you saved my life. It's very meaningful. But like you said, it didn't happen overnight. It was a long path for everything to line up. And I think that's just sometimes how it goes.
And my book that's coming out, Surviving Suicidal Ideation, was really written for the individual who is going through things and want to no longer have to live in that headspace anymore with, you know, but a big chunk that I didn't get to write, which I'm going to have in book two, is more a little bit about the people left behind. That's why I love helpingparentsheal.org. And I'm going to send it to as many people that need it, because you need support and you need resources. You have mediums on there that you vetted. What a great gift for these people to watch people reconnect and just that, almost that weight off their shoulders, just like that. Can you explain how it feels a little bit, that awakening when you get to connect on the other side?
I think the thing for me was, since I already had a knowledge of that phenomena and the validations growing up, I already felt a little better, but still I was in shock. You know, when my son passed unexpectedly climbing a mountain behind our home in Scottsdale, Arizona at the time. And you still have to grieve. I don't care what you think you know or you believe. There's no getting around that process. And it's just brutal. So I would say it was, the first week was really hard. But this into 2 weeks was still tough. But we healed much faster than a lot of other folks who have been through this. And I think part of that was because of my upbringing and what I saw growing up. But it really, with the organization, having seen so many people come through it, coming in a dark place and leaving in a much better place, I developed what I call the five pillars of healing. I don't know if you've heard of this or if you saw that discussion I had with Allison, but that's really kind of the things that I observed that most people that went through our organization, it helped them get over that hump. And I can run through those if you'd like now or later.
That'd be great. Okay.
So the first pillar is pretty obvious. It's support from family and friends. And those of us who are fortunate enough to have supportive family and friends, that's a big help to us. Not everybody has that. But if you do, it's a great resource. And also for them to understand that we want to talk about our kids and not to shy away from it, or try and sweep that topic under the rug. We want to keep them alive in our hearts and in our minds. And so talking about them and even getting to the point about talking about funny experiences or enjoyable times is a plus. The second pillar is to meet and become friends with and associate with people who have been through the same thing. Because like you said earlier, they're the only ones that really truly can understand. If you haven't been through it, you can't understand. It's just inexplicable. And we as an organization provide that because everybody in there has been through that, been on that boat before. And so you'll meet people, especially at the conferences. And a real plus to that is, as I've mentioned on the Allison discussion, a lot, our membership is probably 80-90% women, and men tend to close off more and don't open themselves up to this as much. But during our conference, a lot of women brought their husbands or partners. So they were there and they were kind of indoctrinated, forced to, you know, interact and to maybe sit through presentations and open their minds a little bit to some of these things. And it proved to be, you know, really healing for them. So that kind of got our sub-organization Helping Fathers Heal on a roll, which was really hard to get off the ground, but now it's really booming and a real plus for the men too. Because the women are more open. Let's face it, in general, I would just say the women are more open. They tend to be more willing to discuss these things and more spiritually open oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes. Third pillar is to provide service to someone else. People can't necessarily do this immediately, but in due time with sufficient healing, if they can get to a point where they can give back to somebody else, you know, whether that's doing Meals on Wheels or working or helping a foundation for a worthy cause, or even, you know, working with Helping Parents Heal as an affiliate leader in a location where we need that support, any of those things, you're giving to others and it comes back to you and it helps you heal. I've seen this time and time again. As you give, it comes back. The fourth pillar is a tougher one for some folks. It's to let go of feelings of guilt, because oftentimes parents, especially other people, might think, you know, I should have seen this coming. I could have done this. I could have done that to stop it. I even thought that way a little bit in the beginning, and it's hard not to. And it's because of the illusion we think we're in control when we're not in control. Yeah. And you have to let those thoughts go because they're only going to hurt you and hold you back in your healing process. Yeah. And alongside of that are feelings of anger directed towards another or non-forgiveness of someone you hold responsible, whether that be for some medical issue, like a doctor, or whether it be for someone involved in an accident that you want to blame. It only hurts you not to forgive them. And again, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying if you want to be relieved of that and move forward, you're going to have to go to a place where you can do that. And then the last pillar, the fifth pillar, is the hope pillar, as I call it, because it's being open to evidence for the afterlife, for there being more. That consciousness is primary. It's not an epiphenomenon of the brain. It's a departure from physicalism or materialism that says there's a spiritual nature to all of us, and that is primary. And it came before this material world or any of this stuff. And so being open to it, starting points might be to read books like On Near-Death Experiences, going back to Raymond Moody's Life After Life, the first one that coined the term near-death experience, or Dr. Evan Alexander's Proof of Heaven, who was a neurosurgeon who had a near-death experience, or a book like mine, which explores afterlife evidence from a different angle, more the mediumship and the spirit communication and how certain individuals have this ability to convey messages with high degree of specificity and pertinence to sitters. That's very healing. And that even goes back to a question you asked me earlier that I didn't fully answer. But when I first had the first breakthrough events of communication of that sort, it was very helpful, very healing. In fact, the first one happened 3 days after Brandon passed. My uncle was still alive at the time. Now, my father had been gone for 12 years at the time Brandon passed. And my uncle had asked me if he could do anything to help me. And I said, well, if you get any kind of message you could share, I'd really appreciate it, because my uncle had similar abilities.
Yeah.
3 days later, I'm in the mortuary making arrangements, and we connected by cell phone. And he said, hey, Mark, I've got something to share with you. And I said, okay. And he's like, well, last night I was trying to meditate and I couldn't get anything. But this morning I got up, I was doing my morning meditation. Your dad came to me. He said he was there when Brandon transitioned. Brandon was a little confused at the beginning, but your dad helped him adjust and understand what was going on. And he said, Brandon wanted you to know you're the best parents he ever could have had, which is something you love to hear. But then I got the evidence, because we didn't know the cause of death at the time. And the autopsy had not yet been performed. My uncle said, your dad said that Brandon's death was caused by a lack of oxygen in his bloodstream that causes heart to fail. 2 days later, I talked to the physician who had conducted the autopsy, and she said, well, your son died due to a severe asthma attack that drove blood oxygen levels down and caused cardiac arrest. I had the cause of death 2 days before that from my uncle, and I shared that with family and friends, and that was really a very healing piece of information and validation. And it just kind of expanded from there to where 3 weeks later, I was watching a news clip on the NBC affiliate in Phoenix about a mediumship research study being done at the University of Arizona, where they would put a medium in front of a camera, or when they were filming it or whatever, but a medium would sit in front of some sitters who were behind the medium, and the medium could not see nor converse directly with those sitters. Mm-hmm. And then a proxy researcher would ask questions of the medium pertaining to a deceased person related to those sitters. And the episode I saw, or the excerpt I saw, had, you know, very specific validations. And the medium happened to be Alison Dubois. And at the end of it, they debriefed with the sitters. And I was really impressed, because there were so many validations given with a high degree of specificity pertaining to the deceased person. I thought, geez, I would love to get a reading from her. I'd love to be in that lab, too. And I didn't know it at the time, but both of those things would later transpire.
Yeah.
In fact, the first of which was the very next day. I got a phone call from a man named Jerry Concert, who had been friends with my father. And he said, hey, Mark, I know what you've been through. I know someone who might be able to help you. Her name's Alison Dubois, and here's a phone number you can call to get an appointment. So that was one of those first synchronistic things. It's like, okay, you know, somebody made that happen for me.
Yeah.
And then she was even popular then. This was before the show Medium came out. So it still took 8 months before I could get my reading with her. And then it was a year later, I was actually brought into that lab as a test sitter with a different medium for a Discovery Channel feature. And there's a clip of that on my site too. But I'll tell you one interesting tidbit about the Alison Dubois reading. It was excellent and had so much detail, communication from my father and son. But 2 weeks before I saw her, I visited with a man who had known my dad, and he handed me a box. And I'm like, what's this? And he goes, well, your dad gave me this for safekeeping before he died. And I opened it up, and it was a manuscript called Your Psychic Potential, A Guide to Psychic Development by Richard Ireland. I'm like, well, why did my dad give this to you? He goes, well, you were out of state at the time, and your dad gave it to me for safekeeping. I'm like, well, that was 12 years ago. Why do you give this to me now? He says, I don't know. I just feel like I'm supposed to. 2 weeks later, I have the reading with Allison. And one of the first things she says is, I have your dad here and show me a book, but I believe it's his book, but he's handing it to you for you to take forward. Does that make sense to you?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I think I get that. I later had that book published. So that was one way of me continuing my dad's legacy after he was on the other side.
Isn't it? It's so interesting because, you know, my book's being published with the Swedenborg Foundation, and Emanuel Swedenborg and I, we had a past life, and I used to be his research assistant and hit at the time when he was here in the 16th and 17th century. But, you know, he actually has been working with me to get this book out, and he got me the published, you know, helped me get published and all that stuff through the other side. But yeah, so going back to, you know, there's such a big relief when I've seen some people though that have been able to just hear from them, hear that they're okay, hear, especially because mine is doing, you know, my background and conversations have a lot to do with suicide, which is really devastating. And like you said, on the fourth one, which is the guilt, you know, I mean, especially with suicide, you know, you can go 10 ways sideways and ruin your life. And they don't want us to ruin our life. They, you know, they're going to see us. They're going to see us soon. They want us to, you know, but it's emotional, you know, it's heavy. You can feel it in your body. These, right. It's just like, you have to make that switch, and it's, you know, there's not a lot of resources to do that. I mean, what else is there, you know, other than just get over it, which.
Yeah. The Winbridge Research Center has done some studies on the effects of mediumship in combination with therapy, and found it's far more healing than the therapy alone.
Yeah.
And I found that to be true too, but you know, that's just one way that people can connect with their loved ones. I think it's actually healthy to try and do it directly and use mediumship sparingly, because people can become addicted to that rush that you feel when you get these messages and you realize that that is your loved one and you're getting specific stuff that no one else knows. It's great to have that, but I think people become medium junkies too.
Yeah.
So, you know, really the first way I connected, even before my uncle's message, was I think it was 1 or 2 days prior after Brandon passed, I decided I wanted a direct connection. So I went into the darkened room, which was my walk-in closet, turned off the light, shut the door, sat down on the floor, and just asked for a connection with him and just quieted my mind. And within a short period of time, his face went by, scrolled across my third eye, and he was smiling, and I could feel joy, and he was actually glowing. So I thought, God, this feels great. What came next was unexpected. Then I saw a symbol go by, which was a cross with an oval loop at the top. And I didn't really know at the time what that was. I'd seen them. So after I was done, me being somewhat analytical, I went and Googled it and found out it's an Ankh, which is the oldest cross of human history going back to the ancient Egyptians, with the lower portion representing physical life and the oval loop at the top representing eternal life. So I got a coded message from my son, I believe, that told me he was joyful in eternal life. And had I already known what the symbol meant, I could have said, well, my subconscious is just trying to make me feel better. But since I had to actually look it up, that was even more helpful. Another thing that happened, which is a direct connection. Now, 2 weeks after Brandon passed, I met with the very first intuitive. I wouldn't say she was a medium, but she had some mediumship abilities too. But she told me, she said, I think within 6 months, you're going to see Brandon at the side of your bed. So 6 months later, our family went on a cruise, and it was actually originally scheduled to celebrate Brandon's graduation from high school. But since he couldn't physically go with us, we brought his older brother and his buddy Stu. And Stu is someone who had tried to resuscitate him on the mountain the day that he passed. So we go on the 7-day cruise. Now, before we left, we had loaned Brandon's bass guitar. In fact, you can see it right there. I'm going the wrong way. That blue one in the middle.
Okay.
Brandon's bass guitar. He was a bassist. I'm a guitarist. But we loaned it to a friend we had met named James Linton. We met James because he had been on the mountain the day of Brandon's passing. His group tried to get there and help, but he arrived too late to do any good. Mm-hmm. But he had written onto the online obituary saying, I was on the mountain. If you want to talk to me or meet, call me at this number. So we called him and connected. We became friends. So this is 6 months later. We learned that James is a musician, a composer, a singer, and he had his own in-home studio. So he asked before we left for the cruise if he could borrow Brandon's bass because he didn't have a bass guitar. So we said, sure. So we gave it to him. We're gone on the cruise. We come back. The day we arrive at home, my wife is sitting at the foot of our bed and suddenly feels Brandon's presence and then sees him as a shadow figure out of her peripheral vision, which was very, very healing for her. But what makes it even more compelling was the very next day we got a call from James. And he calls, he gets Susie on the phone. He says, hey, Susie, I got something to share with you, but I don't know how to share it. She thought he'd probably broken the bass, but that wasn't what had happened. He said, well, I was in the studio recording this song, and I felt another presence in there with me. And then I saw a shadow figure out of my peripheral vision. And then I saw flashes of white light, and I thought I was hallucinating. So I went and drank water. I took a shower. I got something to eat. But when I came back, it just got stronger each time. So then at some point, I just submitted and said, okay, Brandon, what do you want? And he said that at that point, he felt guided to redo the lyrics and bass line to this song that he named The Other Side. And he said, this is the best song I've ever written, but I didn't write it. So that was pretty phenomenal. You know, even disregarding the song, just the fact that the two of them had the same identical experience back-to-back days, and he knew nothing about her experience. So those are examples of things that can happen. I've also had dream visits with Brandon, one in which was extremely more vivid than waking reality. And the way I got that was by asking in a prayerful way for the visit before going to bed, and also asking to be able to remember it when I woke up, because sometimes we'll dream and not remember. But this was as vivid as we are right now, maybe more vivid than this waking reality. So those are other ways people could do that, you know, through a meditative process of asking for a visitation, asking for it before going to bed in a dream. And sometimes spontaneous things will happen, like what happened with my wife and James. But in addition to that, you know, the mediumship can be a great tool too, because sometimes people are just too fragile to be able to quiet themselves enough for that kind of contact. Because if they're too emotional or too high strung, it doesn't work as well. You have to get to a very calm state. And that's where, you know, the mediums can come in help and be helpful to you. And I've met many, many of them. I met many researchers in the field, and I have my own medium certification program to vet them to make sure that the people I recommend have demonstrated ability under controlled conditions, as opposed to somebody just going out blindly and, you know, trying to find somebody, you know, on the website.
And it's really, the work you're doing is really, I'm feeling just this overwhelming sense, you know, from Brandon, how proud he is of you and how you're helping so many other people as you got out of your grief, because their life is valuable and they have life purpose here, and we have soul tribes, and everybody that connects, I believe, is meant to connect. If you can really leave this world with what you're doing right now, you know, it's such a beautiful thing. You're just, you're alleviating pain from a lot of people and showing them that they can go on and live, continue their life, which is so valuable. And then also you were talking a little bit earlier about fear of death. You know, it helps to alleviate when they're going to pass a little bit, because it takes a little bit. Don't you think that when you understand the next realm, it takes a little bit of that fear away?
Yeah. I think the people that fear death the least are the ones who have had near-death experiences. People yeah. I know, and they have no fear, you know, they look forward to it when their time comes, but they realize they have work to do here first. But even I remember a friend, a brother of a friend of ours had read my first book, Soul Shift, and he thanked me. And I've never known this about him, but he's like, I used to have this horrible fear of death, but this really helped me understand. And it's unfortunate, but I think that can come from a couple things. You know, one is, the more fundamentalist religious approaches that cause people to have this fear of like a hellish afterlife or something like that. But probably even more so in this society, the atheistic approach of science, you know, and I don't think there's a difference between science as a process to examine things and to find out how things work versus this boxed in view that some people in academia have taken to act like they own science and understand everything, which they don't. And it's tied to atheism in a more militant form that basically says, you know, you're just a physical body and a brain. Your whole experience comes through your brain. And when your brain dies, you die. So you're basically a fear of annihilation, I would call it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm breaking off from both of those angles and finding a place in the middle that says, you know, science is a good process. Being open-minded in a skeptical way is good. But looking at evidence and weighing that and not disvaluing your own experiences is good.
Mm-hmm.
Which sometimes religious fundamentalists tell you, don't pay attention to your own experiences. They're meaningless. I think it's a real flaw.
Yep.
People that believe in God should have their own direct connection in some form or a belief in a spiritual realm or whether they, you know, are just exploring and finding out for themselves. So I'm not going to push dogma from either a camp, but rather I think very important for people to find their own truth. And that's got to be something that they develop through personal experience and their own exploration. And if they subscribe to something else, it's really not their own truth.
Wonderful. I was actually got interested in this when I was younger. I was in the middle of a surgery and I woke up in the middle of the surgery and I started giving blessings to the doctor and the anesthesiologist. And I was in my early 30s and when I was done and in the recovery room, the anesthesiologist is like, I want to talk to you later, you know? And then he called me and he said, I want you to read a book called Many Lives and Many Masters. He's like, I've never seen that happen before. And you were like saying things and you were like saying the light was giving us blessings and stuff like that. Of course, I don't remember it because I was under anesthesia, but I sat up completely, you know, in the middle of surgery. And then the main doctor was like, you freaked me out. That never happened to me in 30 years of doing surgery. And, you know, and that literally piqued my interest of like, I got to go deeper down this hole. And, you know, it's been a lifelong journey since then. But, you know, you get those big moments once in a while that are like, you can either take them or, you know, they'll come back around though, if you miss the first sign, that's what I love about spirit. They're persistent.
Yeah. It's interesting how like these hardcore, they're not really skeptics. They're just debunker types, but they'll try and dismiss even near-death experience research and saying, you know, come up with a variety of excuses that have mostly all been proven wrong. You know, from oxygen deprivation to, you know, carbon dioxide overload and all these things. And then when you've got somebody who's in a coma state for an extended period of time, then they'll say, well, they had their whole experience within this millisecond of time, either when they were before they woke up or when they first went under. So some people you just can't convince. But I think even for them, I would bring up like cases like the Anita Mirzani case where she was lying in a state of coma and dying, and she left her body and went down a corridor far from where her body was laying and overheard a conversation between her doctor and her husband with explicit details about she was on the verge of dying and all these other things. But then she actually revived and was healed, came back, and then recounted that discussion, which occurred nowhere. It occurred nowhere near her body. So, you know, I guess it just comes back to, you know, you have to be open-minded enough to read, to look at evidence and then accept good evidence, you know, instead of just trying to start from a position of where you're trying to make everything match with your own views or expectations, which both fundamentalist religious people do and hardcore materialists do.
Yeah. And I've had people, you know, tell me that I'm just trying to get attention. You know, people love to do negative comments and I just kind of giggle to myself. That's all you can do, because I'm like, if I really wanted attention, there's a lot better ways to get a lot of attention, make a lot of money. If that was my goal.
Yep.
So
absolutely.
Thank you so much. The Persistence of the Soul, right here from Inner Traditions, which is a great publisher that I work with all the time. Mediums visit, spirit visitations, afterlife communication. Thank you for putting this together. We're going to link everything below. So if you've, not sure where to find everything, it'll be on the YouTube channel and then also on the audio channels. Helpingparentsheal.org. If you have anybody who has lost a child and, you think that this is going to, just go and look at the resources and see if it resonates with you and speaks to you. Come back to it later if you're not ready for it, but it will always be there for you. And just take a gander at it or send it to someone who's suffering, in loss. And we actually want to just send a big warm hug to anybody who's needing it right now. I lost a dear friend a few days ago. She was here with me last night, turned the lights on and everything. And so I just want to send love to Carrie. And thank you again, Mark, to all the work that you're doing. And thank you, Brandon, and all the energies coming together to make sure that this is received to the people that need to hear it.
And thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, you guys. Next time.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can find us online at theliberatedhealer.com, on Instagram at Liberated Healer Podcast, or on Facebook at The Liberated Healer. Give us a follow, subscribe, send us a message if you so feel, and thank you for your support. Podcast.